just an agenda for today's presentation. I will first start and begin with a short survey for participants. Then Amanda will speak from Fertilizer Canada to present the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program and outline the program's initiatives across Canada and in Ontario. Dave Buttonham from the Ontario Agribusiness Association will introduce the upcoming 4R Ontario Certification Program by presenting the 4R Ontario Steering Committee members, explaining the development process of the proposed standards, and outlining the scope, implementation process, and structure of the 4R Ontario Certification Program. Finally, Ron Campbell from the Ontario Agribusiness Association will outline the proposed standards in more detail, and the webinar will be concluded with a short post-webinar poll. And before the end of the webinar, we will have the discussed scheduled question and answer period where you can ask the 4R Ontario speakers your questions and concerns. So with that, let's get started. At this time, we will prompt the survey questions one at a time on your individual screen. The pre-webinar poll, there are 4 questions in total, and you are able to select your answer of 1 out of 5 accordingly. Only you can see your answers to the questions, and they're anonymous. We will be only collecting the aggregated answers to view the increase in awareness of the 4R nutrient stewardship. We will give you about the next 2 minutes to answer the questions, or about 30 to 45 seconds for each question. Once all of the questions have been answered, we'll continue with the presentation. At this time, please feel free to let me know if you have experienced any technical difficulties or concerns with the poll. Thank you. Okay, thank you, everyone. Your answers are much appreciated to the poll. I'd now like to introduce our first speaker, Amanda.
Thank you very much, Mackenzie. Much appreciated. I would like to say good morning to everyone on that has dialed in online, wherever you are this morning, and welcome. So I'll be speaking to an overview this morning on 4R nutrient stewardship. I'll first start off by providing a quick overview on what 4Rs is. I'm sure there are many of you on the call that have a level of familiarity with it. 4R nutrient stewardship is an innovative approach for fertilizer best management practices. This approach considers economic, social, and environmental dimensions of nutrient stewardship and is essential to sustainability of agricultural systems. The concept is simple: apply the right source of nutrients at the right time and in the right place. But the implementation is knowledge-intensive and site-specific. The agricultural industry, government, and conservation authorities in Ontario are committed to sustainable food production, and 4R nutrient stewardship provides a science-based framework for implementing, validating, and communicating. My presentation today serves as an introduction to the 4Rs, and will help you to understand the economic, social, and environmental benefits of putting these practices to work on your farm. The right source means ensuring a balanced supply of essential plant nutrients, including granular fertilizers, liquid fertilizers, and or manures. Right rate is applying just enough fertilizer to meet the needs of the plant while accounting for the nutrients already in the soil. The right time means applying fertilizer when the plant will get the most benefit and avoiding times when fertilizer can be lost to the environment. And the right place is where the plants can easily use it and where it is less likely to be lost to water or air. So in exploring these 4 rights in a little more detail, the first key principle of right source is the idea of a balanced supply of nutrients. Since the nutrient in short supply limits growth, if you add a nutrient to soil that's already there in sufficient quantity, the crop will not respond to it, or at least not in a positive way. The other side of the coin is if you have 2 nutrients that are in short supply and you only add one of them, the crop will not respond, or at least not very much, until the second nutrient is added. But when it comes to crop nutrients, don't add what's already there, and when you add things that aren't there, balance them. The second important principle when making source decisions is to make sure that the source of nutrients is a good match for the soil. This means you have to take into account both soil properties like pH and soil conditions like moisture. For example, avoid applying urea to high pH soils due to higher risk of volatilization losses. With the two scientific principles underlying right rate decisions, these revolve around soil supply and plant demand. The idea behind the supply side principle is that we need to assess all sources that are contributing nutrients to the crop when determining nutrient addition rates. While this is conceptually a pretty simple idea, it's often difficult to put into practice as a multitude of factors interact to control nutrient supply. Assessing nutrient supply is not an exact science, but that said, we do have some tools, for example, soil testing, that give us good approximations of nutrient supply in the soil. And when it comes to nutrients added as fertilizer or manure, we can directly measure the quantities added to the cropping system. Demand is influenced by variables in the cropping system, including moisture, temperature, and soil type, which all help determine crop growth and how much of each nutrient they will need. Demand also varies based on the crop type. For example, wheat's different than corn, and even based on the variety of the chosen crop. A useful way to think about crop demand is to think of it in terms of yield potential. For example, silt loam soils typically have a greater yield potential than heavy clay soils. Since higher yields mean higher nutrient demands, we will need a greater supply of nutrients on the silt loam farms compared to the heavy clay. Remember that it's important to assess both the nutrient supply and the crop demand when making the right rate decisions. The right time for nutrient additions is closely linked to the supply and demand idea we just covered on right rate. If you think about the way a crop grows, let's take an annual crop such as corn, for example. Early in the season, the crop is small and nutrient demand is very low. In most parts of Canada, soils are still cold and the soil supply of nutrients like phosphorus can be too low to meet even that small demand. Once the crop is established, the growth rate is accelerated and increases in vegetative and early reproductive stages. Then, as the crop matures, the growth rate and nutrient uptake slows and then stops. As the season progresses, soil supply also tends to increase for nutrients like nitrogen that are supplied in part through mineralization of soil organic matter. So we want to make sure that the nutrients are there when the crop needs them, whether it's early in the spring or mid-season. And we want to take into account that the soil supply of these nutrients changes as it progresses. The second principle for right time is to consider the risk of nutrient loss when deciding the timing of your application. When nutrients are added to the soil, they don't just sit there until the crop takes them up. They can react with the soil chemically to form precipitates. They can be absorbed onto surfaces. They can move below the rooting zone with water. They can be lost to runoff. Soil microbes can take them up, and they can be transformed in gaseous forms and be lost to the atmosphere. All of these processes can remove nutrients from the available nutrient pool. It's important we consider these losses when we make our timing decisions, both to ensure adequate supply for the crop and to minimize the environmental impact from losses. Making sure that nutrients are in the right place means about nutrient placement on the scale of the individual plant and on the larger management unit or landscape basis. At the smaller scale of individual plants, different crops have different rooting patterns. Corn and wheat, for example, have a fibrous rooting system with a largely horizontal orientation. Soybeans have a taproot system with a primarily vertical orientation. So in a sense, corn and wheat have a greater ability to explore the soil near the surface for nutrients, and soybeans have a greater ability to explore the depth. When making placement decisions, particularly for fertilizer, we need to consider whether the placement chosen matches the rooting orientation of the crop. This is the first principle under right place, to consider rooting patterns when making placement decisions. The other way in which placement needs to be considered is with respect to the spatial variability of the landscape. We all know that crop yield varies across a field, and this variability in production potential depends on a number of soil and microclimatic factors. Right place means we should consider the spatial variability at the landscape level when developing our BMPs. To start, considering variability can be as simple as looking at each field as a separate cropping system and assessing the nutrient needs based on the characteristics of that field. Of course, the idea of managing spatial variability eventually leads to some form of variable rate fertilizer application, which might be the best of the best management practices when it comes to managing spatial variability. So that wraps up our quick look at some of the 4R principles that form a framework for developing BMPs. So what are the appropriate goals for implementing 4R nutrient stewardship by means of a 4R plan? And some examples are shown here on the screen. Economic goals would be things such as to improve farm profitability by improving return on fertilizer dollars, or making the most of dollars spent on fertilizer, or contribute to improved regional economic development. There are social goals, which could be things such as improving access to sources of information to assist in farm management decision-making, improving product supply, labor supply programs, emerging technologies that increase efficiencies of field operations and reduce costs per unit of crop harvested. Environmental goals could be things such as prevent nutrient loss from the cropping system, or improve recycling of crop nutrients from crop residues and livestock manures. The point is that goals, while they are the big picture part of 4R, need to be relevant to your farming operation and to the need of the community. They also need to be relevant to other stakeholders, local and global communities. Who are these other stakeholders? They're your neighbors, the people you do business with, governments at all levels, the companies that use farm products to make other products, and at the other end of the food chain, the people who sit down at the supper table. Finally, goals need to be something that allow better nutrient management of the cropping system. To start with, it's a good idea to keep your goal list relatively short. It's important to make real progress on one or two important goals in each of these three areas rather than set a bunch of goals that are hard to meet or are hard to measure. So that's an overview of the kind of the philosophy and principles of 4R Nutrient Stewardship. And at Fertilizer Canada, we work with stakeholders across the country, such as provincial governments, farm groups, environmental groups, and industry to link the province's objectives for environmental performance with 4R Nutrient Stewardship. And so these projects include information development and distribution, 4R Nutrient Stewardship training, materials, programs, field extension events, and field trials. And you can see on the screen there, this gives you a pretty good snapshot of our existing 4R programming in Canada, which is broken up by various means of implementing 4Rs in the province. So you have MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, in a couple of these provinces, demonstration farms where we're working with participating producers, and then as well our 4R research network, which seeks to quantify innovative best management practices under 4R nutrient stewardship, so new best management practices or enhancement of existing ones. Now, many of you have probably seen this image before as well. The Ontario agriculture industry, of course, is committed to working towards the long-term improvement of the Great Lakes water of the Great Lakes water quality and the growing algal blooms in Lake Erie, supporting the need to protect and restore the ecological health of the Great Lakes. It is being part of the solution to ensure the Great Lakes remain drinkable, swimmable, and fishable. The industry recognizes the importance of environmental stewardship and its role in ensuring the proper use of fertilizer. And Ontario has been a leader in encouraging farmers to use nutrient management planning, especially for our nutrient stewardship planning, when it comes to sustainable crop production. So that's all I had on my end, and hope that you guys will enjoy the rest of the webinar.
Perfect. Thank you, Amanda. I'll just take the opportunity again to kindly remind you to please place your phones on mute if you haven't done so already during the presentation. You can either use *6 or there should be a screen on your device as well. Thank you. At this time, I'll welcome Dave Buttonham from Alaba, who will introduce the background structure of the upcoming Ontario 4R certification program. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, and good morning to everyone on today's webinar. It's good to see such a large attendance from the ag retail and CCA segment of the industry. But in saying that, it's not surprising because ag retail and CCAs are going to play a pretty pivotal role in the success of the 4R ag retail certification program. So over the next few minutes, I'm going to kind of go at that 40,000-foot level and provide a brief overview of what's taken place over the last 2.5 years to get where we are today. And as all of you know, Ontario represents a good chunk of Canada's most viable and productive farmland, and accordingly, we have been a leader in nutrient management planning for crop production over the years. More important, though, the province of Ontario has embraced 4R nutrient stewardship as a valuable tool for meeting the province's agricultural and environmental goals. And it is now recognized as part of the Ontario government strategy to reduce nutrient losses from Ontario farmland. Specifically, the 4R nutrient stewardship program is referenced in the Draft Canada Ontario Action Plan for partnering on achieving phosphorus load reductions in Lake Erie. So it's nice to get that recognition of 4R, but when you get the recognition of 4R, you got to put some effort behind it to ensure that we can implement it properly. So 4R nutrient stewardship offers ag retailers a strategic opportunity to provide some leadership to Ontario's farm community as they move towards meeting provincial objectives to improve water quality of the Great Lakes and contributing watersheds while increasing productivity. Findings suggest that 4R stewardship can offer significant benefits as compared to traditional practices, and the adoption of 4R nutrient stewardship will continue to ensure the effective protection and conservation of Ontario's agricultural soils, water quality, and ecosystem health as they relate to nutrients. Because every farm is different, the implementation of 4R stewardship practices is fully adaptable to the broader diversity of Ontario agriculture. And when you talk about Ontario agriculture, you do talk about that broad diversity. So to get where we are today, the Government of Ontario, Fertilizer Canada, and the Ontario Agribusiness Association formalized a commitment on agricultural sustainability and environmental action. With combined OWABA and Fertilizer Canada investment of over $300,000 over 3 years, the funding partners signed a memorandum of cooperation in September of 2015. And that MOC formalizes efforts that will assist Ontario farmers to maximize crop yields with a minimal environmental impact. So on your screen there, you can see a number of the groups that we brought into this collaborative effort, which we call 4R Ontario. And so certainly the lead organizations are OWABA, OMAFRA, and Fertilizer Canada. We have grower organizations there, Grain Farmers of Ontario, OFA, and CFFO. We also wanted to bring in the technical side of the business, and they've served on the technical committee, is IP&I, the Crop Advisor, Ontario Certified Crop Advisor Association. And then we also have the environmental side of it, which includes Ontario Ministry of Environment and Climate Change and the Nature Conservancy, as well as Conservation Ontario. So we have the three-legged stool here. We have government, we have industry, and we have environmental groups at the table. And I think collaboratively, we are working very closely together and have built a program that we feel has a great opportunity to work. As one of the major initiatives under the agreement, we proactively collaborated to develop a voluntary, and I stress this is voluntary, ag retailer certification program that will accelerate on-farm adoption of 4R nutrient stewardship as a best practice for responsible nutrient application and management. The 4R Ontario Steering Committee and the Technical Working Group have developed the 4R Ontario certification program and the associated audit standards that are going to be presented to you later today. So we'll move to the next slide. The proposed standards were developed by the steering committee, but that was done in close collaboration with the 4R Nutrient Technical Working Group. Our science and tech group played a very, very key role in that. It's based on the existing 4R Ohio certification program. And during the fall of 2016, we actually brought the Ohio program up and test piloted it at 4 ag retail locations in the province to test it against the validity, suitability, and accountability for the Ontario marketplace. The results of this pilot program and evaluation really did kickstart the development of a Made in Ontario ag retailer certification program. So in addition to the general principles of 4R nutrient stewardship, the standards have incorporated specific criteria for the purpose of addressing regional priorities for water quality. Before, our Ontario Steering Committee has adopted a process of continuous improvement and will continuously work with the research community to ensure that the standards stay up to date and provide the most current research available. So I think the key thing is that this is a living document. This is a program that will continually evolve based on the research and the science and technical capacity within this industry. And I think that's an important consideration. Next slide, please. The general goals of the 4R Retailer Certification Program supports the goals of the Ontario Memorandum of Cooperation Agreement, and it aims to address concerns surrounding the Great Lakes water quality by creating long-term improvement on water bodies associated with agricultural production areas. The goals of the program are as follows. They optimize crop uptake of nutrients and minimize nutrient losses, create long-term positive impacts on water bodies associated with agricultural production areas, and that includes the reduction of eutrophication and incidence of harmful algae blooms, and helping to meet water quality standards, encourage sharing of the most up-to-date information about responsible nutrient stewardship with nutrient service providers and growers and other interested groups, and help the ag sector adapt to new research and technology in the area of nutrient stewardship. 4R is simply the right thing to do. It's right for growers, it is right for retailers, and it's right for the environment. Due diligence and accountability permeates much of what we currently do in business today. And with recognition that the industry is headed down this road, now is the time to get ahead and demonstrate leadership and make a positive contribution to the environment. The 4R Ag Retailer Certification Program will empower ag retailers to say what you do, do what you say, and be able to prove it in very, very clear and certain terms. Ag retailers are recognized as key production partners by farmers across this province. They are the go-to source for information. And within that, CCAs play a very, very key role as well. 4R Nutrient Stewardship takes the farmer-retailer relationship to the next level. Working with the farmer on completing the plan is much more than just a fertilizer sale. It is an opportunity to fully understand and see the whole scope of the customer's fertility requirements and to offer advice and input into strategies that will make the best use of nutrients in that farming operation. And once again, it's important to recognize that 4R is based on region-specific best management practices, and that the 4R Ontario Steering Committee will continuously work with the Science and Technical Committee to identify and implement improvements. The coming months will focus on that continuous improvement. Ag retail staff can also earn CCA credits for 4R training, and it's generally felt that the agronomic team within your companies will naturally be inclined to support a program like this that is fundamentally based in the latest scientific best practices. Finally, 4R Ontario is going to give 4R certified retail partners the opportunity to display and co-brand 4R marketing materials so that you can communicate to farmers that you're supportive of getting their acres into count and help us show how Ontario farmers are leading the way in nutrient stewardship. The program is designed to recognize nutrient service providers who have adopted the principles and practices of 4R nutrient stewardship. The term nutrient service provider includes those that are engaged in the sale of nutrients to farm customers, those engaged in making nutrient recommendations to farm customers, and those engaged in the application of nutrients on farmland. These standards translate for our nutrient stewardship from right source, rate, time and place into a set of auditable criteria that demonstrate due diligence and accountability. It is really important to note that the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Ag Retail Certification Program is voluntary, and while it will be of direct interest to all nutrient service providers across the province, we fully expect that the initial and priority geographical focus will be on those retailers and farm customers feeding into the western basin of Lake Erie. And that map kind of shows that, that geographical area right now. That being said, every one of us have freshwater streams and waterways in close proximity to the farmland that we serve, and each and every one of those freshwater streams and waterways are also priorities. 4R certification standards will be audited via an in-person audit process, And to add credibility to the certification program, retailer audits will be completed by an independent third party. And this was very important to 4R Ontario as we started to build a program that was accountable not only to the industry, but to external groups such as environmental groups and the public at large. The 4R Ontario Steering Committee has selected the Agrochemical Warehousing Standards Association, AWSA, as the third-party auditor for the program. AWSA is very familiar to most of you, and the level of competency that they bring to this program will be extraordinarily good as we start to build that accountability factor. The audit standards will total 37. They're divided into four different sections: training and education, recommendations, application, and documentation. The degree of conformance to the standards will be assessed by the auditor, and that auditor will evaluate each auditable evaluation standard. It is very important to note that the ag retailer will only be audited on what the ag retailer can control. That has to be an important component to understand. The ag retailer will never be expected to be accountable for something that they're not in control of. Audit results will be reported as in compliance, not in compliance, or not applicable. We're in the midst of the 45-day comment period that will close at the end of February. That has been initiated by Fertilizer Canada. Following that, the 4R certification program is scheduled to be published April 1st, 2018, and over the next several months into the fall of 2018, we'll work on implementation. The 4R retailer certification program will run on a two-year audit cycle. Each audit standard will be reevaluated on that two-year cycle by the third-party auditor via an in-person audit in order for the retailer to maintain certification under their program. Once again, we are in the consultation period. The proposed standards are open for industry and public comment until February the 28th, 2017. And all those comments are to be submitted to Mackenzie Smith at Fertilizer Canada, and her contact information is on that screen. I would really encourage you to get those comments in. The Science and Tech Committee will be looking at those comments. 4R Ontario Steering Committee will be looking at those comments, so that your input from the broader industry is really important as we build a program that meets the needs of CCAs, ag retailers, the farm community, and the public. I'll turn it back to you, Mackenzie.
Thank you, Dave. So I'll now welcome Ron Campbell, again from WABA, who will go through the 37 4R Ag Retail Certification Program standards and the related evaluation criteria for each standard. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, thanks, Mackenzie. So as Dave, I think, laid out kind of an overview of what's involved in the program, I just want to reiterate a couple of key points. I think he mentioned one: when I go through these audit standards, when a retailer is audited, they are audited only on what they can control, and we may get into this a little further as we go through the standards, but keep that in mind. This is a voluntary program are probably a couple of the key ones. So there's four main categories that was mentioned in the standards. So I'm going to go through those four categories and the individual standards within each. I think I will go through all of the standards, and then we will open it up for questions at the end of the webinar if you have any comments or concerns. So the first standards are around training requirements. The first three are on your screen right now. There's a couple of different levels of training responsibility that the retailer will have to provide and document. One is a more of a general training that is pretty much through all staff, not just the ones making recommendations, but application staff, sales staff, et cetera, that there is a basic knowledge of 4R and 4R principles around staff and during an audit. The auditor may break up the day and have different groups come in for 10 or 15 minutes just to have a discussion about 4Rs with them as part of the audit. two or three gets into more the around the certified professional. And when you look at these, there's the three columns. Obviously, the first column is identifying the standard. The second column is the requirement, and then the far right column is the evidence and types of things that the auditor will be looking at during the audit. So certified professionals, we're looking at your certified crop advisor, and as we move forward, putting more focus on those CCAs that have their 4R specialty, or a certified nutrient management consultant, who are doing nutrient management plans. So those certified professionals must have current certification in good standing, and then any staff making recommendations must have proof that they are attending training, at least once every 2 years on principles and standards for our nutrient stewardship. Certainly, if your staff is a CCA or a certified management consultant, then proof of their active status is sufficient because obviously they're getting that training in order to maintain their standing. Which makes it easier. If you have staff doing recommendations, either because they're new or they chose not to be CCAs, you do need to show that they are continuing to take courses and training over those 2 years to maintain their knowledge. And then T4, it continues that around training, around the sales and application staff, so that they're taking some nutrient stewardship training every 2 years. And this is something I think through 4R Ontario, Fertilizer Canada, if you go on their website, they already have some online training. We're going to look at probably beefing that up a little bit more to help retailers access that training for their sales and applicator staff as well as their agronomy staff. So those first four are around training of staff, then the T5 and T6 are around training and education of grower customers. So need to show that conveyed informational materials on 4R stewardship to all grower customers, and you sponsored or provided training sessions that are available to all grower customers. So you would have to show proof that if you had a grower meeting, that there was some at least presentation on 4Rs as part of that meeting, or maybe showing through a mailing list or email list that you provided information to your grower customers. So that concludes training. We'll now move into recommendations. The first standard around recommendations is that soil tests are conducted by an OMAFRA-accredited lab, and at minimum they contain results of organic matter, phosphorus using Olson, potassium, and pH. Keep in mind this is just a minimum. If you CEC or you want to use the Bray for phosphorus, those can all be included in this. But that is, and micronutrients as well. But this is the minimum requirement for a soil test that you're using to make recommendation. And in R2. We want to see a soil test that are conducted at least once every 4 years that are used on that recommendation. The 4 years, it's in line with what Ohio is doing, and the OMAFRA recommendation today is 3 to 5 years, so we went with the 4 years as kind of an average. R3, nutrient recommendations utilize the soil test history of the field, including the most recent soil test. So the auditor would like to see that not just the latest test is used, but that you are keeping records of previous tests, and so you can show trends in organic matter, P and K levels, et cetera, in the fields, and that those are being incorporated into the recommendation. And then for 4, the soil tests are taken at an appropriate depth from a relatively uniform area no larger than 25 acres. So currently, the OMAFRA recommendations for a number of years has been that 25-acre max. We've maintained that, but we've added wording around relatively uniform areas to strongly encourage growers to be looking more at greater zone sampling as the appropriate method for taking the samples. Number 5, if manure is applied, content of total and available nutrients is based on either OMAFRA's database or using a sample and analysis following recognized guidelines. So the reason for this, obviously, for our, it's been developed more on the fertilizer industry, but we realize for this program to be successful in Ontario, we have to take into account all crop nutrients. Manure is a significant source of nutrients in Ontario, especially in certain areas. But we also realize that it is a challenge for a livestock or poultry farmer to get a good analysis done ahead of time. Because, especially if it's a liquid manure situation where it has to be agitated, typically you're not going to get a truly representative sample until the time it's being applied, which does not give time for those results to be incorporated into the recommendation. So therefore, using the database when doing the recommendation, but we're still encouraging and hoping that you encourage any of your customers that are livestock poultry farmers to do samples when they are applying, and because those are the numbers that get incorporated into the database to keep it up to date and current. Number six, when you're doing the recommendations, you're taking into account all known sensitive areas such as tile inlets, wellheads, gullies, and water bodies. And R7, you include setback distances around those known sensitive areas. We made sure we included the word known in there. Once again, you're only able to control what you can control. With things like the Clean Water Act and sensitive areas being identified, this is something that you'll have to work with the grower customer to make sure that you know of what sensitive areas are in those fields and make the recommendations and applications accordingly. R8. All sources of nutrients are accounted for in the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Plan, including, but not limited to, commercial fertilizers, manure litter, biosolids, covered crops, and the previous crop. So this gets back to R5 on doing using those, the EMAFRA database for manure numbers. You have to incorporate all sources, and you have to show. So what happens during the audit, the auditor will come in and ask, and basically pull a number of representative files and go through those. And you have to be able to look at that file and say, we made this recommendation, and then be able to back up why that recommendation is valid. So certainly accounting for all nutrient sources is an important part of that. Another is that your R9 is your crop yield goals that you're discussing with the grower are based on previous crop yield history, either, history you have through yield maps with that farm, or if it's a new customer, you may have to use the township averages. But it has to be a credible yield goal that is being used when you're coming up with those recommendations. And number 10, this gets into to the recommendation source that you're using, and those you're using that application rates that are at or below limits specified by a nutrient application recommendation recognized by a government or academic institution that reflects growing conditions consistent with those of the customer. So as David mentioned in his talk, we have taken the Ohio program and we have modified it for Ontario. In Ohio, they use the tri-state recommendations. And in Ontario, we have the Ontario recommendations, but not everyone necessarily uses those. So this allows some flexibility that if you are in the southwest part of the province and conditions are similar to what a farmer might have in Ohio and Indiana, you can use Tri-State. If the producer is a livestock poultry farmer that's regulated under the Nutrient Management Act, then NMAN, which is a government-recognized recommendation source, is allowed. So it just gives a little more flexibility. Once again, whatever you're doing, you just have to be able to support and document why you were doing that when discussing this with the auditor. So the next two are around nitrogen, and obviously the focus of kind of what's driving this program is issues around phosphorus loading in the Great Lakes, but we know that nitrogen use is going to be followed closely, whether it's greenhouse gas impacts or water quality, and so we want to ensure that there's some nitrogen elements as part of this program. So 11, if urea or UAN is broadcast and not incorporated, within 24 hours it is recommended to be applied with enhanced efficiency end source. And the next one is that you're having that discussion with your customers around nitrogen management and including some of the options such as split application, nitrification inhibitors, and slow-release technologies when you're discussing this with your customer. So that would require a producer sign-off and some records with regards to R11. So these are newer ones that we've incorporated, I should have mentioned off the top, and I think Dave mentioned this is a living document. This is an evolving program as more research is being done around nutrient management and impacts on water. Things are going to adjust, and as new technology comes forward on the crop nutrient side as well, those will be incorporated into the standards as we move forward. So that concludes the recommendation. So we'll move on to the next page. And the application standards. The first one, pretty basic. The records will indicate that your application totals did not exceed what was recommended for the custom applied acres. And we've added within an acceptable margin of error for calibrated equipment. So, standard approach there. Number two, phosphorus injection, subsurface banding, or broadcasting with immediate incorporation are the recommended placement methods unless the risk of phosphorus loss to surface water has been demonstrated to be low according to a phosphorus index risk assessment procedure. We're definitely pushing and promoting incorporation either during application or immediately following application of phosphorus. I know, both at the provincial and federal levels, there are work on phosphorus indexes that hopefully will be useful in helping to incorporate issues such as no-till, cover crops, slope, soil types, those types of things into helping make some of these decisions and identifying those areas where you may be able to broadcast without immediate incorporation. But even then, we would still strongly recommend incorporation wherever possible. And then three, crop nutrient applications are neither made nor recommended to be made on frozen or snow-covered ground. This we just want to align with what we're seeing on the manure side. We don't think there's a lot of applications happening. There obviously the one area is winter wheat, and there will have to be some allowances there. For the most part, any custom application by crop input retail is probably not happening during this time. Total application of phosphorus not to exceed the quantity needed for the next 2 years of planned crops. So basically only allowing a two-year loading if you're doing the application. Five, nutrients are applied according to a written nutrient recommendation that is prepared within the prior 3 years. Just want to make sure that nutrient plans are being constantly updated with the grower customer, and so that's for the reason for the three-year limit. Six, all nutrient application equipment must be calibrated at least annually. This is probably another example of something that's being done already, but just have to make sure you have the documentation showing that it is getting done. A7 is something that will be new to the industry. So this is broadcast applications of crop nutrients without immediate incorporation are neither made nor recommended unless a documented local weather forecast indicates less than a 50% chance of rainfall event involving more than 1 inch of rain beginning in the next 12 hours.
Holy
so God. For this standard, a retailer will be asked to print off a weather forecast on a regular basis every morning, for sure. The has to be a verifiable, either private or government-operated weather forecast service. The retailer should be using the same service every day so that you can't cherry-pick. And if the forecast shows that there's greater of a 50% chance of a 1-inch rainfall within that 12-hour period, they should not be doing any custom application, and they should not be recommending application to the grower customers or who are doing it either themselves or through a third party. Obviously, this is going to certainly change the culture of how things are done now. Quite often, we know the busiest days at a retail outlet are when rain is in the forecast. And this is just a risk management. So if it's a 10% chance, and so you go ahead and then you end up getting 2 or 3 inches of rain, this will not count against you in the audit because you've gone through the risk management process and managed it as best as you can. And so because we know forecasts are certainly not going to be perfect and things will happen. The remainder of the application standards, so 8, where in-field variability and crop nutrient need or environmental risk is identified and variable rate application is warranted, site-specific nutrient application is used. So this is a case where we took the Ohio standard, which was very focused on variable rate technology and trying to hit certain percentages of acres, and we started with a little bit more of a generic approach. We know that in some areas, there's not a big push on the variable rate, and we don't want retailers, this being a barrier to retailers participating in this program, just because they don't want to purchase equipment or either our software that there just isn't a demand for in their trading area at this time. So this allows to show and encourage the use of site-specific nutrient application. It gets away maybe from the idea that the variable rate technology has to be, the very high-end technology. It could be as simple as turning the spreader on and off in different areas. As I said, this is a starting point. As we move forward, some of these maybe may get tightened up and we put more of a focus on site-specific application variable rate technology as we move forward in the program. Number 9, your records show and method of application, time of application, a field map with the location, nutrient sources and rates, the weather at the time, and the weather forecast. So the auditor will be looking for these records when they're going through the files. And then number 10, no application of fall nitrogen other than co-applied with phosphorus sources to meet fall planting nitrogen requirements. Once again, this was an adaptation of an Ohio standard, where I think there is a lot more fall application of nitrogen. I don't think it's prevalent in Ontario. So we're not recommending, just applying nitrogen for the sake of applying nitrogen in the fall, but realize that saying no application wouldn't work because obviously there is the nitrogen. You're going to get a nitrogen out of your MAP, for example, application. Or you may need some nitrogen if you're putting in winter wheat or cover crop. So that is the reason for the wording of that one. And documentation is the final section, and this will be, a challenge, I think, for everybody. I think for the most part, the recommendation and application standards retailers are either doing or doing most of what's in those standards, but we may not be documenting it to the level that we need to for the purposes of an audited program. So the first one is you provide a list of grower customers and the number of acres in the following categories: full service, recommendation only, application only, and an estimate of all other acres. And this is simply for the auditor's purposes. As I mentioned, they're going to pull files. So if you have 100 that are full service, they might pull 10. If you only have 20 that are recommendation only, they might pull one or two. So it helps them determine what files they pull to do appropriate audit at your facility. Number 2, the nutrient service provider maintains records related to all nutrient application recommendations by them. We kind of hope that's being done already. It allows them to be either hard copy or electronic. Number 3, the records related to grower customers are kept confidential and are made available for review during an audit. So this is just a way of ensuring that the confidentiality is maintained. There will be a confidentiality statement signed between the retailer and the auditor at that time that allows the auditor to look at those records, but only on site, and they will not share that information any further. D4, just documentation around all relevant national, provincial, and municipal laws related to nutrient recommendations and application are kept on site, either electronic or in hard copy. And I think For Our Ontario has discussed helping put together an easy-to-go library of this information at the national and provincial level. The retailer will have to keep track of municipal regulations on their own. Next. Five, the records of individual fields that are accessible to the retailer are made available to the grower customer include, at minimum, field boundary, soil type, soil test results, nutrient recommendations, the crop yield goal, and the rates applied to each field. Number six, nutrient recommendations have been reviewed and acknowledged in writing by the grower customer with a signature on file. And certainly, I think from our discussions with Ohio, that was probably one of the biggest challenges retailers had, was just getting all those signatures on file, because we know that can be a challenge. Those recommendations, as well as being signed by the grower customer, should also be signed by the certified professional. What we are looking at is probably, you know, they should be signed off at least by a CCA with some oversight by the CCA with the 4R designation. The D8, the plans include information about the yield goals, sensitive areas, soil type, et cetera. Once again, with hard copy or electronic files on hand. Nine, the records related to monitoring for our implementation must include the watersheds and sub-watersheds where farms are located. So this is just to help track acres and identify where 4R is being implemented in the province. Watersheds, you know, should be fairly easy. Sub-watersheds can sometimes be a challenge, and this is something we may work with Conservation Ontario to help provide the resources to make that a little easier for the retailer. So that was a fairly quick look at the 37 audit standards, and I'll turn it back over to Mackenzie.
Perfect. Thank you, Ron. At this time, we'll have a prompt. I'll prompt a short post-webinar poll. You should be prompted with questions one out of three, one at a time, where you can again select your answer of one to five accordingly. We'll give you again about 2 minutes in total for the three questions, and after all three questions have been answered, we'll continue on to a question and answer period. Again, please feel free to let me know if you experience any technical difficulties or concerns during the poll. Thanks. Okay, thank you for your participation today in today's webinar, and thank you very much for completing the pre- and post-webinar polls. It's much appreciated. We'll now open the floor to the audience, to you for questions and comments regarding the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program, the Ontario 4R Certification Program, and the 4R Certification Standards, or any other questions and concerns related to the webinar. I will say, with approximately 90 participants in today's webinar, that we'll ask that your questions be entered. If you can either enter your name in the chat or by pressing the raise your hand button on the webinar platform to the right. This will just keep the questions consistent, and we can answer your questions one at a time. I'll call upon your name when I either read it in the chat or see your hand raised on the webinar platform. However, if you do prefer to ask your question anonymously, or if you'd rather send your question to us, you may do so. You can enter your question on the chat function and just state that you'd like it to be anonymous, and then I can read your question aloud, and the 4R Ontario speakers can answer your question that way as well. So I will move forward to look at the hands raised and chat function. So first I have Rahul Kumar Patel with his hand raised. Feel free to ask your question now.
Question to the panel member that how this 4-hour nutrient management strategy program will impact on environmental issues in future, like the one that we are surrounded by the five lakes and we are having a trouble happening of those algae bloom and all those. So how this will impact?
Well, there's no quick fix to algae blooms in Lake Erie. And in fact, we could stop applying phosphorus today and we'd still have algae blooms in Lake Erie for the next period of time. I think what this program does is it demonstrates a due diligence on the part of agriculture that we're doing our part to reduce phosphorus losses from agricultural lands that contribute to phosphorus loading in Lake Erie. So to come out and say that this is going to solve the problem, no, it's not going to solve the problem immediately, but it's one of the sources of phosphorus that agriculture can control, and we've taken steps to effectively manage that phosphorus source and reduce phosphorus losses from agricultural lands.
Okay, thanks, Dave. The next question I have here is, are electronic signatures or an email confirmation suitable as a grower signature, or does it need to be an original signature? So I'll open the floor to the steering committee for that.
Ron here. I think that would probably be okay. And this is something, so another thing that's going to happen as we evolve this program is AWSA is currently going to start training their auditors and doing some test audits to kind of test the process and their reporting process. And some of that will help determine kind of what the evidence needs to be. But I think, as long as you can show that the farmer has approved or recognized what is going on, whether it's electronic or handwritten, that should be acceptable.
Okay, thanks, Ron. I have a second question here. It says, if Velosa conducts our CPIC audits and now 4R as well, can we do these audits on the same visit or do they need to be kept independent of each other? It's a good question.
Probably more for AWSA to answer. I don't see any problems, I think, on our end. I don't know if what we're looking at is probably a full-day audit for this. To a day and a half, depending on how it goes. When we had the Ohio auditor come up and do the pilot here, I think it was a full day at least at the four facilities they visited. So if you want to go through all of that at one time, and then, yeah, I think you can make that work.
Yeah, it's Cassandra Cotton at Fertilizer Canada. Just to add to that, Ron, additionally, I think there is a process for doing combined audits, but I believe given the kind of audit that we're talking about doing with the 4R, it would most likely be a different auditor under OWASA that would be conducting those audits potentially because the qualifications for an auditor for this program would be that they also have to have their CCA accreditation. So it might be two different auditors. It might not, depending on who that person ends up being under OWASA. But that to say, if you preferred to have them come, organize them to come on the same day so that you're only inconvenienced for that day, then I don't see an issue with that.
Okay. Thanks, Cassandra. I have another question here prompting a follow-up question to what we just discussed from Matt Gardner. I don't know if you'd like to ask your question on the phone. Feel free to do so.
Sure. I was trying. Good morning, guys. My question was, what is the percentage of phosphorus loading attributable to agriculture in the Lake Erie Basin?
Great, Matt. I'd like to say, oh, I've got that number on the top of my head, but I don't.
Well,
I think I can come up with that number. I think that there are some numbers that are projected. How valid they are, I don't know how valid they are, but I think that what we do look at is that all scientific papers do indicate that agriculture is a source of phosphorus in the Great Lakes. What that percentage is, and certainly if you look at the Ohio situation, I think the Ohio situation, probably the phosphorus from agriculture may have been a greater percentage out of the Maumee River potentially than what it might be in southwestern Ontario. So to kind of generally blanket that to say the percentage, it's difficult to say. But
right.
I think we have to acknowledge the fact that agriculture, because we do use phosphorus as a plant nutrient, we are under scrutiny for any losses of that phosphorus into surface waterways. So we are a contributor or perceived contributor to the problem.
Understood. And my question was a little bit of a follow-up to the earlier gentleman's question. I expect the same kind of response, Dave, in the reading that I've done, which is, you know, agriculture is a portion, they are a contributor, but they're certainly one of many contributors. And from the reading that I've done, it could possibly be one of the smaller contributors, but we're certainly willing to do our part.
And I think that's a fair comment, that we are willing to do our part, and if we don't do our part, then we have to suffer the consequences of not stepping up to the plate. And we certainly do not know how government may respond if, in fact, we aren't doing our part.
Thanks, Dave. So, Mackenzie Smith from Fertilizer Canada here. I will just say, Matt, that we don't have the specific number right now or percentage, but like you're saying, it is a contributing factor and a portion of what's going on. And our work with the International Joint Commission and the Great Lakes Water Quality, we will look into their statistics and the number and forward you that information with regards to your question. I now have a couple other questions, two from Dale Cohen. The first is, what training will be available for dealers to get ready for the audit? And if you're not you are for regulation. So I don't know, Dale, feel free to speak to that by unmuting your phone, or we can open the floor to the steering committee to answer that question.
It's Cassandra here. In terms of the first question, what training will be available for dealers to get ready for an audit? There will be what we're calling a 4-hour coach who will be available to all retail facilities to come and do kind of some pre-audit coaching. So they would know the program well. They will be trained and participate in all the pre-training with OWASA. So they'll be able to come to the facilities if you wish to have them to do some pre-audit, make sure that you're prepared and ready and kind of identify some things that you might be missing that you'll need before you bring in the auditor. And that is free of charge. That's a coaching service that's offered to agri-retailers at no cost in terms of coaching. In terms of the question, if you're not...
Well, It's not really a question. It's Dale Cowan here. I'm just making a statement. If you're not for 4R, then it's a vote for regulation. I mean, we don't have a lot of choices left here. If the next alcohol boom hits, we haven't got a lot of wiggle room left. So I'm just making a statement that this is a chance to do a voluntary effort to mitigate any potential P loss off our field.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Dale. The next question I have refers again to the phosphorus levels in Lake Erie. It says, do you know the current legend load in Lake Erie for phosphates and how that will impact future algal blooms? I believe I'll speak to that and say that we probably would reach out again to the International Joint Commission to get a more detailed answer with respect to those numbers, but I will give the steering committee a chance to answer if they'd like to.
I don't know, Dave.
I think one of the key things to recognize here is because the Canada-U.S. Domestic Action Plan have mentioned that 4Rs in their documentation, I think that there's some recognition here of 4Rs as being a credible mitigation tool for phosphorus losses. So I think that that is probably the key thing to look at from that vantage point. Again, it's difficult to measure and to quantify just exactly what agriculture's contribution is, but I would agree with Dale is that governments with the next harmful algae bloom will be looking at corrective actions, and those that have not taken corrective actions voluntarily may find themselves in a regulatory compliance situation. And I think that's the whole intent of the industry here is to get ahead of this and to address this as a voluntary type of response with the idea that if we don't act today, then we will have to suffer the consequences of what happens with the next algae bloom, and there will be another algae bloom.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of joint recommendations happening on both sides of the border in terms of phosphorus reduction targets. This is kind of our way of dealing with those targets so that it's not, you know, solely focused on rate reduction.
Sorry, go ahead, Ron. Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, just to follow up with what Cassandra was mentioning, you know, they are looking at, you know, targets of reduction loading, phosphorus loading reductions into Lake Erie of around 40%. I think it could be very easy for some people outside the ag sector to make the correlation that a 40% reduction loading would be easily achieved by reducing the amount of phosphorus applied by 40%, and that's something certainly we want to avoid.
Thanks, Ron. So with that, I'll move on to the next question, which asks what percentage of farmers in the southwestern Ontario region have implemented the 4R nutrient stewardship program thus far. So we're just looking at a preliminary survey we did in Ontario, which estimates that approximately 2 out of 3 farmers are implementing nutrient stewardship best management practices. So that will be ongoing with the certification program and numbers there, but that's what we have on our.
Yeah, so essentially this group that's implementing the certification program also has been doing some grower surveying to get an idea of what kind of best management practices farmers are doing or not doing. And we really zeroed in on Ontario growers over the past few years. And again, this is, you know, surveying where we're talking about essentially potentially, you know, 66% of growers are implementing 4R practices to some extent. But that's not something, you know, tangible enough for us to go to the government and go to those decision makers that are looking for something more tangible. The part of the certification program would also allow us to actually count acres being advised under 4R nutrient stewardship so that we can make sustainability statements about what retailers, growers, industry is doing in the province to not only help grower profitability but to address environmental concerns. So all that to say, we don't have exact numbers, and it's exactly why we're doing this program as well, so that we can quantify the work that's going on out there.
Thanks, Cassandra. So the next question I have is, will we be looking at a similar rollout to the neonic regulation where certain regions are focused on to be audited first? Any feeling for different handling those areas different than the Great Lakes area?
Maybe Dave, you want to talk about that?
Well, because this is a voluntary program, that'll be guided by the industry and guided by those retailers that want to become certified. That's the whole concept of the voluntary. We know right now it's a province-wide program. It's available to all retailers within the province of Ontario. But we do know right now that the priority region is probably the feeders and lakes and streams into the western basin of Lake Erie. That seems to be the current hotspot, for lack of a better term. So I think that what we will find here is that it is a voluntary program. How and who wants to become certified will be driven by the industry. And I think one of the key things here is to look at is this is we want it to evolve as a market-driven program. We want producers to be asking their ag retailers for this. We don't want ag retailers to be shoving this down the throat of the farmer. I think it's got to be a collaborative effort that both farmers and ag retailers have the technical capacity and the desire to achieve the results from this program. So it will not be targeted in different regions. I think that by virtue of the media and what has happened in the western basin of Lake Erie, I think by default the western basin of Lake Erie is certainly the primary target. But that being said, those retailers servicing that watershed will ultimately make the choice as to how, when, and where they become certified.
Thanks, Dave. So the next question I have is, will the certification audit process be branch-specific for retailers with multiple branches across multiple geographics, or what should we be targeting as the percentage of compliance across our customer bases? So two questions there. I guess we'll start with the first one, and I'll open the floor for answers.
Sure. So the audit is location-specific. So a retailer with multiple locations would have to get each location certified separately. Obviously, there's going to be, in those cases, the data collection and management is going to be consistent, so it should, you know, hopefully help the process, but there will still have to be an audit at each location. And then what the second one, what was that? Question again?
Sorry, the second one was asking if there will be a percentage of compliance across the customer base.
So does it have to be 100% everybody's following the...
Yeah. So
keep in mind, I guess, the first part, as I mentioned earlier, you're only audited on what you can control. So that will be the first... part of this. So if you make a recommendation and do it all properly, but the farmer takes the spreader and does the application themselves and doesn't follow for our practices when they do that, that will not impact your audit. So if that's some of the areas of concerns, you don't need to worry about that. Things around the signatures and those things, we want to see 100%. There may be a bit of leeway off the start because we know it's going to be a challenge to get these processes in place around the audit. But I guess I'd need to know kind of maybe an example or where you're concerned to properly answer it.
I think it's probably safe to say that we don't expect that every certified ag retailer is going to have 100% of their customers and 100% of their acres under this. That certainly is the goal. But when we're dealing with farm customers, we have to, as everybody knows, not everybody is an early adopter of new programs and new technologies. So I think that, again, as Ron had mentioned here, the ag retailer and the certification is controlling the things that you can control, and for those things that you cannot control, the key thing would be those acres will not be included in the 4R acres that are submitted by that ag retailer.
Dale Cowan here. I think what the question was getting at is, if I had 30 accounts that I was in control of, do I need to pass all 30, or is the 80% score going to be a passing grade? I think that's what the question is around the audit.
So I think that's something we'll, you know, part of what we'll have to do when we sit down with AWSA and go through the process. I think for a lot of the elements, we want to see where it can be 100%, that it is 100%, in those areas where you have the control over it, as where the retailer has control.
I think a lot of this, Dale, comes back down to the customer pull on this thing as a market-driven program. And And if you have 30 clients and you can only get two that want to be 4R certified, then I'd really question why you want to become a 4R certified retailer. So I think what it is, it becomes part of that continuum of educating and leading the farmer to where you want them to be and really promoting it. You know, I think that ideally we'd like to have 100%, but I think, as Ron said, we will have to look at this on a continuous improvement basis to say what is a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, Dale Cowan again. I guess one comment I would make is the farmers in the western end of Lake Erie are kind of taking this on the chin, and I'd just like to remind everyone that the Thames watershed is a major contributor, and it starts around Tavistock and heads west, dumps in the bottom end of Lake St. Clair. So it's the whole watershed that's contributing to phosphorus, not just the farmers in Essex County. So I just want to make sure that's understood, that it's a pretty big watershed that's contributing.
Plenty of bird feed. We stock a number of options, including our very own wild bird feed that we can mix.
Thanks, Dale. I'll just ask that everyone places their phone on mute again during the question period unless they're participating in a question. Thank you. So we'll move on to the next question. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say Dale's comment is fair, and that we at OABA, we did meet with a number of ag retailers in that Thames River watershed probably close to a year ago now to review this program, and I think there was pretty broad support for the concept of moving forward on this. But I agree is that the Great Lakes is not just the Thames River. It's not just the Grand River. The Great Lakes watershed is every stream and surface waterway that find their way into the Great Lakes. So as that's where we have created a broad-based provincial program, but we also do recognize that unfortunately the media attention and all the attention has been the western basin of Lake Erie, but it is not an Essex County or Kent County issue. It is a broader issue than that, and I think your comments are duly noted and agreed upon, Dale.
I totally agree. It's Garth White. I'm president of Fertilizer Canada, and I just want to add, you're bang on. We're not the full contributor of this, but we went to the Great Lakes Forum. There was about 1,000 people there, and maybe there was 20 ag sector representatives. And those 990 or 980 representatives were pointing fingers at the ag sector. We were able to say to them that we're part of the solution, not part of the problem, and the International Joint Commission has said, you know, 4Rs is one of the solutions, and we were the only group that put forward a solution. Everybody's sort of putting fingers at the problem, and we were one of the groups, we being the ag sector, saying, look, this is one of the solutions. We're not fully part of the problem, but this is one of the solutions. The other point, though, we're not just selling this as an environmental program. We're selling this is to help farmer productivity and profitability. And in other parts of the country, they are seeing that as, and the research is showing this as helps with the farmer as well. We can't just do this as an environmental program. Those are my only two comments, everyone, but I just wanted to put that on there, Dave. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Garth. So, Dave, I'll move on with the next question, if that's all right. It says, what are the other sources of phosphorus in the Great Lakes Basin? Will most municipalities be regulated also? So I believe this may be a question more for some of our Conservation Ontario representatives on the 4R Ontario Steering Committee, but I will open the floor maybe to Dave if you'd like to say anything.
Well, other sources would be industrial runoff. There's urban runoff. There's sewage treatment plants. There's septic tanks. There's all kinds of different sources. I know that the sewage treatment plants have undergone a fairly significant retrofit over the last number of years and have been reducing their phosphorus loading. But you have industrial sources and you have the urban runoff issues that continue to be a problem. So there are multiple sources out there of phosphorus and as Garth said, though, I'm not sure how many of them have come up with proactive solutions to reduce their phosphorus losses.
Yeah, On the second part of that about municipalities, will they also be regulated? I'm not sure what that's referring to, but I just wanted to be clear that this isn't like a regulated program, that it's a voluntary program for ag retailers to kind of address the issues that we're facing on a voluntary basis. So this is not part of government regulation, nor is it required for, you know, membership with OABA or Fertilizer Canada or anything of that nature.
Thanks.
Well, I think it's important to note here that sewage treatment plants, for example, are probably already under a regulatory compliance regime of the provincial government. And so I think that we can't speak for those other industry segments, but this program is a voluntary program for agriculture.
Thanks, Dave. So the next question is, do those farmers have crop uptake and crop removal databases to determine how best the 4R nutrient management or nutrient stewardship programs are working or not? So maybe I'll open the floor to Ron to speak to that.
I don't know if I know Dale's on or any other members of our science and tech committee might have maybe a better answer for that question. People who do it every day.
Dale Kahn, can you repeat the question, please?
So the question was, I think it's referring to the previous question when we were speaking about the percentage of farmers that are adopting 4R nutrient stewardship practices. And the question is asking with regards to those farmers if they have a crop uptake or crop removal database systems, I guess, to determine how best the 4R nutrient stewardship program is working or not.
Well, we certainly have available all kinds of data backing up what crop removal are. It's easy to measure if you want to send a sample to the lab to analyze your grain corn. So, yeah, so those sources are readily available and vetted, and there's OSMRSC tables available, OMAFRA publications, industry. So there's lots of things to base the recommendation on and verified through yield goals and estimated crop removals post-harvest. So there's opportunity to verify all the way through.
Dale, one thing in that addition, I work in Saskatchewan region as an agronomist, and this year there was a dry over there, and I sent some samples of tissue, like grain and stubble samples, to the lab in Ontario here to determine those uptake removal numbers. And surprisingly, what I found that the lab number suggested me the number that farmer put down a lot of fertilizer over there this year, but the removal number not matching the number that is available online, like IPNI web page or even on Manitoba or Saskatchewan web page for those database that is available. So in a dry year, what happened, like phosphorus and all those removal in grain will become less because of the dry year situation. So sometimes in a year, like 2016, if you remember, like 2016 in Ontario was dry. So like our 4R program was just started recently, you know, like nutrient management strategy, just a few years before we started this program in Ontario. So if we have those databases available, we can easily, you know, educate our farmer in Ontario that how it behaves, like removal data, in a dry year and in wet year, so they know when to cut back their numbers, so that in that way we can reduce our phosphorus loading as well as the nitrate leaching into the waterways. This is just my thinking. I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but you might be add on more on this one.
Well, sir, certainly the function of removal is nutrient content times yield. So in a dry year, you're going to have lower yield. So even though your concentration may change, the total removal amount per acre should be less in a dry year, regardless of concentration, I would think. And in a dry year, you tend to get more, or in a wet year, you get to get more dilution, but you have more yield, so you should have more removal in a higher yielding year. So there are going to be some differences. But this program doesn't exclude any of those. If you want to manage in that manner with lab samples on a field-specific basis, then you have verifiable, auditable data times a yield map. So there's perfectly okay to manage that on a year-to-year basis if you want to account for that kind of variability. And secondly, your soil tests are going to reflect every 4 years whether you're over-applying or under-applying. So there's lots of checks and fail-safes in our approach, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for that question, and thanks, Bill. I'll move on to the next question, which asks when and how is the pre-audit going to be available. So we spoke earlier to a coaching position or a pre-audit to help with the implementation of the program. So we expect that the audit this year will roll out to occur between hopefully mid-July and early fall. Therefore, we're hoping to have the pre-audit available, or we'll have the pre-audit available before that auditing period. And so that will be the timeline for the pre-audit. And then we will be working with them, and they would be taking the auditor training and be well aware of the standards and what evidence will be looked for when the actual audit process does occur, and so they can come to the facility to help guide as a pre-audit and answer any questions with regards to what documentation or what evidence is required for different standards and questions and concerns from there. So with that, I'll move on to the next question as well. It says, how many farmers logged into the webinar yesterday? Again, I can speak to that. The number was approximately 50 attendees for the webinar that took place yesterday. And then we do have another webinar this afternoon for public and conservation partners as well. And then just to say again, we had over 100 people registered for today's, and we had a turnout of between 80 to almost 90 at one point, pending the egg retailer webinar that's taking place now.
Membership of various things.
So that's all the questions that I have on the chat and with hands raised at this point. I have another question that came in. Sorry. It says, who is the 4R coach and how are they vetted? So we've recently agreed with Warner Egg, who includes Lynn and Paul Warner, as the 4R Ontario certification coach. They were vetted by the 4R Ontario Steering Committee and approved, which includes all of the members that were listed previously, as well as interviewed by Fertilizer Canada, OABA, which included Dave and Ron, as well as Jim Campbell. And so their experience and their credentials were vetted and looked at with relation to the certification program in that structure. Dave, if you'd like to speak to that further, please feel free.
No, I think you've covered it off. It was a process that 4R Ontario undertook, and that selection process is now completed, and Warners have been chosen.
Perfect. Thanks, Dave. So we'll look at concluding the question and answer period. I'll just maybe give a minute for any last-minute questions on the chat function, and then if not, we'll move on to the conclusion of the webinar. Thank you again for joining today's webinar. As we said previously, and I'll state again, the standards, the proposed standards are open now in a 45-day consultation period until the end of February, February 28, 2018. And your comments are encouraged and can be provided in writing to myself, Mackenzie Smith at Fertilizer Canada, and my contact information is provided on this slide. I will also note that the handouts or the proposed standards with introduction are available on our website and have been circulated by the 4R Ontario Steering Committee, but they're also available in English and French on the handouts tab of the GoToWebinar platform, or you can definitely email myself if you'd like any of those documents. Thank you very much, everyone, for participating in today's webinar, and we hope you have a great day. Thank you.